Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Are you frustrated by your typical hunting and fishing magazines? Are you tired of reading content meant for guys up north or in the Midwest? Don't get left behind following the guidance of guys who don't hunt and fish in your home state. Pick up a Great Days Outdoors magazine subscription and become a better Southern outdoorsman. Great Days Outdoors magazine can be found at your local Books-A-Million, Tractor Supply Company, Rural King, or you can save and buy online at greatdaysoutdoors.com. Alrighty guys, before we jump into the report this week, we've got a really cool opportunity for you. We've partnered up with AFTCO, and they're now offering all of our listeners a free sun protection mask with any purchase of AFTCO products. AFTCO makes a ton of great products for all types of anglers. All that you have to do to get your coupon code is to text ALFFR. Again, that's ALFFR for Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list and we'll send you the promo code via email. Alrighty guys, welcome back to another week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. I think we are finally done with the last of the cold snaps. It's after Easter, so y'all can go ahead and plant your tomato plants now. It's starting to warm up. Looking good out there on the water today. We're checking in with Tony Adams over on Lake Eufaula. Tony, what you been up to?
Man, I'm telling you what, I'm glad that weather's cleared up. The fish is just on fire right now. You know, we just had so many cold fronts to come through and a lot of rain, you know, which, you know, we get a lot of that rain and it muddies the lake up, which, you know, we have black crappie on this lake. We don't have any whites. And those black crappie, to me, just don't hit in the muddy water, you know, like a white crappie. So, but they are on fire right now. The weather's pretty, you know, sunny, warm. Couldn't ask for, you know, a better day to go fishing.
It is definitely over the weekend down here where I'm at. It was a little cold, and our water level here on the Delta was falling, but it was really, really muddy, just nasty, dirty. Like you could see on sonar, I keep my sonar perpetually, you know, kind of on a lower frequency, try to tone out a lot of the trash and stuff you got floating through the water. But man, even with it dialed back on the sensitivity, you could just see trash and you could see trash on the surface of the water. But I'm looking at it now and it was, well, I was out Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and it got better each day. So I think now we're starting to look pretty good out there. Tell me about this. You were sending me some pictures earlier, and I see it looks like you was out fishing a while back with the Easter Bunny. What's the story with that?
Yeah, you know, I love doing pictures, you know, and it's a conversation starter. I've done the Santa and Easter Bunny and, you know, Uncle Sam and Superman and, you know, just all kinds of characters I'll do, you know, based on what season it is. And, you know, when I have youngsters to come up, they always ask, you know, say, well, you're the guy that takes Santa, or you're the guy that fishes with Easter Bunny, or, you know, it's just a conversation starter. And a lot of people like to see, you know, that seasonal, you know, characters, you know, in there, you know, same way with Superman. Sometimes I'll put the Superman outfit on and get some pictures with, you know, with some crappie. And it's amazing how many people really looks at the pictures with the costumes on. And, you know, like I say, they love looking at them. And then, like I say, the youngsters, it's a conversation, you know, say they went with a guy that took Santa fishing or whatever. But I sent you those pictures. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it definitely got my attention when I seen the Easter Bunny, when I saw that he was catching more fish than I was. I mean, I felt a certain way about it. So it definitely got my attention.
Yeah, the Easter Bunny was... It's a hit, you know, it's usually a hit every year, try to do something a little different. And then, you know, the other pictures I sent you today, that was some that I've done. I had a trip on Sunday, which, like I say, you know, that's right after the rain. It was a little muddy in the creeks. So we kind of went out to the main water, didn't fish the main water in the deeper water. We mainly fished in about 8 to 15 foot deep. So some of those crappie started coming off the banks, you know, that's already spawned out. And, they're getting back on those brush piles. Right now they're kind of, like I say, on Lake Eufaula, Alabama, they're on fire right now because you can catch them on the banks fishing minnows, cork, maybe fishing about 2 foot deep. You can use minnows or you can use jigs, just twitch it coming back to the boat. There's fish, that's in 4 to 6 foot of water right off the bank. So if you had your line 4 foot deep, just kind of twitch it back with a minnow or jig. And you can just throw a jig up there. I use a 16th ounce jig head. My favorite colors is usually orange or either pink. And my favorite color, is what they call acid rain, which is a white yellow chartreuse. If I'm on the boat, I'm gonna have that jig in the boat, but they're biting, on the banks, away from the banks, and they're biting on structure right now here on Lake Eufaula. I know I stopped at the store this morning to get a drink on my way to work, and they told me they were sold out of minnows. So there was nobody in town that had any minnows. So, that's usually a good sign that you need to be on out there in the water, catching some slabs.
Definitely. That's something that happens down here. So my bait shop that I go to, she does a real good job, and I don't know that I've ever seen her out of stock of crappie minnows. She'll run out of the big bass shiners and stuff like that from time to time, but she knows that crappie is where it's at. She knows she's been doing it for long enough that she isn't gonna run out, but the little local country gas station by my house, they'll run out. And that's how when they get their crickets in or when they get their shiners in, and then you go in there and they're turning people away at the door and the cricket cage ain't making noise, that's when you know you should be out on the water.
Right. And I've noticed, the last couple of days too. I mean, I reckon we got a full moon coming April 23rd, which is not that far away. And I think it's next Tuesday. But I've started seeing some pictures on Facebook where people's catching some shellcracker now too. So, it's that time of the year for the shellcracker to, to be on bed, and plus the bream also. Some of the pictures I've seen with the shellcracker was a good shellcracker.
It's funny that you mentioned that because coming up on the next segment, we're actually going to do a little talk with Steve Graziano. He sat down with me a while ago and was talking about how to find those big bluegill beds. And he helped me with an article that we're going to come out with this spring. But he was telling me what he does. He's not a big bluegill fisherman, but he catches big bass that will lay up in those bluegill beds. And it was a really interesting conversation. And that's something that I love to do. Is go catch bluegill and especially a shellcracker down here in the lower delta. We get a lot of shellcracker, get up near the grass and stuff like that. And man, talk about fun on an ultralight rod. I actually just bought another one today for this year. I got one that's it's an ultralight rod, like a Panfish Elite from Bass Pro Shops. It's a 7 foot rod, but it'll throw a 1/32 ounce jig, a little casting ultralight spinning rod, and it's nice. You can free line live red worms with it with 2 pound test, and it'll actually load and throw one. It's a just an awesome rod, and I love doing stuff like that. So it's exciting. There's a lot of good stuff going on. I know whether you're fishing for crappie, bass, everybody that I've talked to the past couple of weeks, like it's good and getting better. So.
Yeah, that water temp, temperature is right. I was out there Sunday, and I think it was 72. That was after the cool front and after the rain, with muddy water, which, that muddy water is going to heat up a lot faster, at the top, than clear water. So, but like I say, there was, just all on the banks, on structure, shallow structure. Like I say, they're just, some spawn, some getting ready to spawn. A lot of males is still up there around the banks. A lot of males being caught right now, around the grass or around the rocks. Some of the females we caught Sunday, some of them had already spawned out. There was a couple still had eggs, but we also last Tuesday we was catching tons of fish, in 8 to 10 foot water, right, just right off the bank. So if you could come off that bank, and fish in 8 to 10 foot waters, I mean, that'd be good groups of fish, just sitting on that structure, just right off the bank, on the first little pile of structure you came from the bank, that it'd just be loaded.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's down here. I know. I didn't go crappie fishing. I probably should have. I had it in my head that I wanted to go chase bass. So I did that, and I got on some bass. Took my wife out, and but man, everything down here right now in the Mobile Tensaw Delta group, everybody's blowing up with pictures of bass. bass, and then down here, what people are doing, and I'm actually going to go out this evening and give it a shot, but people are setting limb lines for big flathead catfish and doing really well. So I kind of got the bug to do that looking at pictures. I know I've read some articles that you've done in the past with John Phillips about running jug lines. And, jug lines, limb lines, trot lines is something that I enjoy doing. And I'm always curious to hear how people run their jug lines because I've seen everything from, a piece of Sirvan twine tied around a Dr. Pepper bottle thrown out in the water. And then I've seen some fancy PVC rigs. I've heard every theory under the sun for what the best bait is. So what's your thoughts on that? And when do you usually do that? Is it still a little early for it? Usually I think jugs are a summertime thing.
Well, believe it or not, right now is probably the perfect time to go out there and catch, good cat and a lot of cat because, most of those cats is in the creek mouths now. They're in the mouths of the creek. They're gonna get ready to come up and spawn, lay out. Usually in April, what I like to do is run my lines, 8 to 16 foot deep, and I like to run them on the edges of the channel. If you can find a sandbar, that's usually even better. Just kind of keep it on the edge of the sandbar. That's, April, May. Now after May, I'll start going deeper jug lines. I'll run them anywhere from 18 to 60 foot deep, during the summer because that water's just, so much hotter and they go deeper. But I still run them on the edge of the channels. Try to play it so that whichever the way the wind's blowing, the wind's not blowing them up in the shallow water or in the structure. It's kind of running the way that the channel is running. So it stays right on the edge of the channel. The wind kind of blows them down through the channel in the deeper water. My favorite bait, is I like skipjacks or shad. And then, sometimes if I'm out of that, I may use mullet. I have tried the chicken breast, soaked in Kool-Aid. I have used that. That's, a pretty fair bait, but my favorite would probably be, my far most favorite skipjack and then shad and then mullet. I use a Gatorade jug is what I use. And a lot of times if you go to these ballparks or whatever, people are drinking tons of Gatorade. They're throwing the Gatorade bottles in the trash. And usually you can get with the park, and talk to them and, they'll let you kind of come after the game or the next day or the night they're picking them up and you can kind of go through and get you enough jugs to use for jugs. And then what I do is I take them and I paint them and I paint mine. My favorite color is orange. Seems like it, fluorescent orange shows a lot better on the lake than anything else. And I've done it two or three different ways. I have bought the fluorescent orange and gallon size cans and poured the fluorescent paint into the jug and shake it up and then pour it back in the can. And I have little stakes. What I used was really the fiberglass like tomato rods. And I have 24, 25 stuck in the ground in the backyard. And I kind of let them hang them upside down with the cap off, so that they could dry. The only thing is doing it on the inside the jug, it don't seem like they chip as bad as on the outside. A lot of times I'll take those jugs and I'll spray paint them fluorescent orange on the outside, and I'll take some of the spray foam, unscrew the lid after the paint is and dried. I'll take a little spray foam and spray on the inside so that it holds up a lot better and those fish won't sink it as deep as would if it was just a jug. I have had catfish take it so far under that the jug would just collapse. All the air would just come out. So that spray foam kind of helps, with it from, completely collapsing.
I've done similar painting them on the inside. The only tip I'll add to that, if folks is listening in, is if you paint them on the inside, like Tony's talking about, let them dry the caps off, and they'll dry good. But if you sit there and do like I did one year, and you paint them and then you put the cap on them, you'll go to use them that weekend, and they'll been sat there for 4 days, and the paint won't dry on the inside, and it'll start running and streaking, and it just turns into a mess. But yeah, it's crazy to me talking about. Hearing you talk about running a jug line 60 feet down here on our rivers, I think on average we're about 20, 30 feet depth. And I got a couple places where I could probably let out a 60 foot line, but That's a mighty deep catfishing down there. I'd be scared to see what I'd pull up in a hole that deep here on the river. So that sounds like a lot of fun.
And tell you what, it's a lot of winding too to wind it back up and put it on that jug. But there's big catfish down there laying on the bottom. During the summertime, the heat, real heat. They're laying right on the bottom on those ledges in that deep water. And as far as line, I always just go and get me some 40, 50-pound test, and I get mine from Walmart. I usually use the green, and I use like a sometimes a 2-aught, 3-aught, 4-aught. Sometimes I use even a 6-aught, 7-aught based on what size catfish I'm targeting. I use no lead at all, so it's all natural flow. So when you put the bait on, you throw the hook out, that bait naturally falls down. So when a fish, hits it, he or she does not feel any kind of weight, being on it. So, they just swallow it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, because they don't feel any weight that's pulling against that hook, and that natural flow just seems like it works so much better than putting a piece of lead, throwing it down, and letting it sink.
That's interesting. I've always weighted mine, but I can definitely see that. I know I've played with doing limb lines that way, especially if you're baiting with like live bluegill and stuff like that, foregoing the lead sinker and just letting the bait be free to do what it's doing, right? I mean, that it makes sense. If you're fishing with a rod and reel, especially a lot of the saltwater guys down here, they're just free line of bait, like, and the thought is, why would you have anything other than baiting a hook? I like that. I'll have to try that on my jugs this year, trying to take the weight off of them. Do you prefer with your jugs? Do you run? I know a lot of guys have switched to circle hooks, or do you still run the old like J hooks, the old, what do they call them, like O'Shaughnessy's or something like that, the old trot line hooks?
Yeah, the only thing I use is circle hooks. I mean, they bite it, and I mean, it pretty much just hooks themselves. I mean, they're there, and when I'm running my lines, I'll use a circle hook, like I say, a different size, based on what size catfish I'm really trying to target. If I'm targeting big ones, I'll use a bigger hook, and I'll use a bigger bait. And if it's just something to eat, I'll go down to a smaller, a two. Two alt or circle hook would still use that 40, 50, 60-pound test line, do fish it the same way, but I'd use a smaller hook with a smaller piece of bait. And then, like I say, when I throw my jugs out, a lot of people will throw their jugs out, in a 40-yard circle of the boat. When I start putting mine out, I pretty much try to run a straight line. So and they may be 100, 150 feet apart from jug to jug, running down the channel. And I try to run it as much as possible in a straight line based on what the channel's doing. Because you can come back through there, even though that jug's not jumping up and down or going under, it may be just pulling. And if you got a jug that's out of line, you got a fish on, so you can just ease over to it and gather them, because a lot of times, they'll hit it, and they'll just run with it. You know what I'm saying? Just pull the jug without pulling it under. So I do like to put my jugs further apart in a longer span, so I cover more area.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've done that down here on Tensaw River. Just anchor up right there on the edge of the channel, like you talked about, and set them up and, kind of time when you let them loose so that they space out in a straight line, like you're talking. And then you pull up your anchor and you drift with them. And like you said, you can see real quick if one starts to kind of move off into deeper water or move up in the shallows, and like you said, get out of line, and you can tell easy if one gets hung on something, and you need to go babysit it and get it fixed. It's definitely a lot of fun. And I find with set line, and like a lot of people will frown on it, look down on it, because people do let jugs get loose and it turns into trash in the river. And some people, it's kind of associated with overfishing a fishery, I guess, like people hauling all these coolers full of fish. And but there's some skill to it, to do it and to get really good at it, and not just go out there and throw a dozen out on a weekend every summer. Like if you do it regular and study it, you'll find little things that definitely up your success, like what you're talking about, getting right there on the channel, putting them out on a straight line. You can get a little sly with it, keep your brain busy.
And you got youngsters, they running jugs really keeps their mind busy. their minds is so busy. They're always wanting to do something. So, you're always either pulling the line up, checking the bait, or taking the fish off, or, riding from spot to spot. And, some of the youngsters now, they just sit there. Even if you are catching bream or crappie, they kind of get bored, but seem like when you're running jugs, their mind's doing so much other things, and they're moving, and the boat's moving, and they're seeing different things and doing different things that they don't get as bored as fast, running jugs as, fishing with a cane pole or a rod or whatever.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's not just kids, just new fishermen in general. I know when my wife was first starting to fish with me, I think a lot of what kept her interested was jugs. Cause watching a bobber's pretty fun, but if you get a bunch of them out there, if you got a couple
Right.
dozen bobbers that you're watching at the same time, that's a lot of fun. So I'm getting excited. I'm fixed to go out there and I'm fixed to give it a try. Tony, I know you're booked out pretty far in advance. You're a pretty popular fellow over there on Lake Eufaula, but if folks want to get with you and book a trip, where's a good place to look you up?
Yeah, the best thing to do is they can look me up on Facebook, Tony Adams, Eufaula, Alabama, and they can call me on my cell phone, 334-695-3003. That's 334-695-3003.
Well, there we go. You guys definitely go check them out if you're looking to book a good crappie guide over there on Lake Eufaula. Tony, enjoyed talking with you, and definitely wish you luck on your next fishing trip.
Well, I appreciate it, Nate. And like I say, I enjoyed talking to you, and anything we can do, just let me know, and going out there this afternoon and get on some.
Absolutely. We're going to give it a shot. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Texas Hunter. Texas Hunter Products is celebrating 70 years of engineering the highest quality outdoor products in the industry. The Texas Hunter brand has become synonymous with quality, dependability, and durability. Their premium standards have earned the trust of generations of anglers, hunters, and outdoor enthusiasts across the country. Texas Hunter directional fish feeders feature patented technology and are among the highest rated in the industry. With multiple capacities available and deployment options for shorelines or docks, Texas Hunter has the fish feeder for any lake or pond. You can trust that Texas Hunter products will meet your needs for generations to come. Learn more at texashunter.com. Southeastern Pond Management. Since 1989, Southeastern Pond Management has been a leader in pond and lake management services. If you own a pond or lake anywhere in the Southeast, Southeastern Pond Management can evaluate the health of your pond and then work with you individually to put together the right plan to get what you want out of your body of water. Through electrofishing, liming, fertilizing, and stocking and weed control, Southeastern Pond Management is the one-stop shop to help you produce more healthy trophy fish than ever before. Schedule an obligation-free consultation today. Call 1-888 830 pond or email info@southeastpond.com. Alrighty, guys, we're back, and this time we got Steve Graziano, and today we're here to talk about something a little different, a little special, something that's near and dear to my heart. But I'm a big time bluegill fisherman, and I love in May starts to warm up good. You get done with turkey season, and you can start fishing for them bedded bluegills. That's my personal idea of a really good time. But something that I'm new to, I'm looking at picking up a side scan unit for my boat. And in a conversation we had last year, actually, Graz mentioned that while he doesn't fish for bluegill, he looks for bluegill beds so that he can bass fish for them. So he's the resident expert on locating bluegill beds on side scan sonar, and he's here to talk about that a little bit today. Well, Graz, starting out, just talk to us a little bit. I'm sure I know it's not exactly new technology. I know forward-facing sonar has kind of stolen a lot of attention away from it. But for those who aren't familiar with it, kind of tell me a little bit about what side scan sonar is, just kind of at a broad level.
Well, side scan, the way it's set up is it shoots out from the side. That's the reason why they call it side scan. And it can show you a lot of things, and you don't have to drive over top of them like you do with your down scan or your regular 200 megahertz. And so that's the nice thing about it, because you can set your feet. You can go out 100 feet. A lot of times I put mine on 100 feet, so I'm looking out 100 feet
off to the either left side or the right side is how I do it. Now, a lot of people will do both, but I like to just shoot out one side or the other, and it shows more definition that way. And, you know, you can see trash piles, brim beds, they show up, and it's just a great way to find structure and fish. It'll show fish also. So it's really was the main thing that they came out with before the forward-facing sonar is now. It kind of was the new thing years back. So yeah. You really got to have it to really dial in where your structure is and everything. You know, used to people would put trash piles out years ago on Lake Eufaula, and you didn't have side scan. You know, only way you could find it was really to drive over it and understand what you were looking at. And then you would, used to line up trash piles on things that were on the bank, you know, landmarks, because you didn't have GPS. So with all the tools that you have in the box, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. But side scan is one of the things that I use a lot, mostly, as a matter of fact, although I use them both. But the Hummingbird 360 is a constant side scan when you drop your troll motor in, and I use it a lot. It'll show you brim beds, structure, and fish while you're using your upfront electronics.
Is there anything that you would advise people to look for? Because I'll probably be shopping for a side scan unit this year. If you're looking to add one, if you like me.
Yeah, I really think, and I've had all three brands, Garmin, Hummingbird, Lowrance. Hummingbird, to me, has the best side scan. Now, Lowrance is up and coming. I haven't seen Garmin lately, but I lean towards Hummingbird when it comes to side scan, and certainly with 360, because they're the only ones that have it.
Tell me a little bit more about the 360.
Well, the 360, basically what you have is the transducers on a little puck, okay? And once you drop the trolling motor in the water, because it's basically connected or mounted to the trolling motor, and once you drop it in the water, it actually detects that it's in the water, and then the motor that's inside starts spinning the side scan transducer. So it'll actually go 360 degrees around the boat, so you can see things out the side of you, especially in front and each side, and then the back. So it's significant too.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. So instead of just looking out to your sides, instead of just having it set to where you're looking out, you know, kind of cruising, scanning off to your left, you can see all the way around your boat at the same time, anything out there.
That's exactly right. So part of my day would be to scan, okay, the creek channels, creek bends, river, you know, channels, what have you, wherever I'm at. And then once I locate the structure, brim beds or what have you, trash pile, whatever, hard spots, I'll drop the trolling motor down. And so at that point, I already know kind of what's down there because I've looked at it on the side scan. Okay. Now once I drop the trolling motor down, I'm still looking at side scan, but it's right in front of the boat. And I usually keep the 360 on 80 feet, and it just keeps going around, you know, in a circle, and it draws the information. And it's really the detail is impressive. It really is. And it's I got to have it. I'm used to it. I'm addicted to it.
It definitely happens. I know I fished for years without any sonar in my boat, and then as soon as I got down scan, I got so used to knowing the depth and knowing the temperature that I just don't feel right if I can't at least tell you what the water temperature is that I'm fishing at.
Well, and I part of the equation is a lot of this stuff is expensive, so I get it. You know, not everybody has it, But the advantages are really, I mean, I couldn't live without it. And I've bragged about it. You know, SideScan has been out for a while, but 360 is probably, I'm going to say, 5 years old, something like that. The Mega 360, where they increased the megahertz. I think it's been out about 3 years, maybe something like that. But if you look at most of these pros, how they have their boats outfitted, you'll see a Humminbird 360 up front, as well as your front-facing sonar.
Talk to me a little bit about setting up side scan. Like I know there's a little bit of art to setting up a regular sonar unit, making sure that you're getting a good reading. What tips do you have for setting up side scan to make sure that you're getting the best reading?
Well, one of the things when you're talking about Humminbird, they have a lot of adjustments that you can make. You can actually change the megahertz, basically a frequency that you've got it set at, and you can adjust even the mega part of it. You know, it'll go up to close to 1200 hertz, so you can actually adjust that. And I don't really adjust it that much. I leave it on mega most of the time, but you can change the frequencies that you scan with. And in some cases, it would pay you to change them. It just depends on what you're looking for, how far you want to go out, you know, looking for your best return, so to speak. But pretty much, it's once you get it dialed in, it's easy. I mean, you don't mess with it much at all. The only thing that I do a lot is I'll change maybe the length that I'm scanning. Like I said earlier, 100 feet. Sometimes I'll put it on 60 and and 80 feet. And the reason why I do that is because I'm in shallower water. You know, when you got it on 100 and you're in shallow water, say less than 10 feet, your best bet is to lower the footage on that, and then I'll drop it maybe to 60 or 80. You know, but I start out, if I'm on a ledge, a creek ledge, or a river ledge, and my boat's sitting in 30, 35 foot maybe, and I'm shooting 100 feet out to one side, that's my main tip. If anybody's got it, instead of looking at both sides of the boat, because you're not really interested in the actual river channel if you're going parallel to the you know, river channel. You're looking out to the shallow side, so just do one side, because all of them you can change it to just to left or right or both. So that would be my main suggestion if folks out there that are listening haven't tried that. The definition that you see is a whole lot better than having both sides. Now, if you're out there just scanning for brim beds, or you're out there in maybe a flat running around trying to find trash piles with it or something like that, then yeah, you would probably want to keep it on both sides. But I'm looking for fish usually, and brim beds and structure when I'm out there on the river channel or creek channel.
Tell me more specifically. So, looking for bluegill beds. What time of the year, I guess we'll start. What time of the year do you start seeing fresh beds pop up?
You know, I think they actually bed in probably April, I would think, sometimes in April. You know, the bass fishermen in April, we get hooked on the shad spawn, you know, and that's usually a morning thing. And that's usually when the shad are spawning. So we don't predominantly go after a brim bed at that point. But when you find a brim bed, not only is it a brim bed, and you don't necessarily see the brim in the bed, but what that shows you is that it's a hard bottom also, because the bass love hard bottoms, shell beds, stuff like that. And brim bed is a hard bottom because and the brim are there, and usually the when I really go after the brim beds, is usually in starting in May is when I'll look for them. But at the end of April, that could possibly be a time to look for them too. And I can't tell you how many times I've pulled up on a blend bed and just wore them out. And bass will always hang around it, even if the brim ain't there, because it's a hard bottom. It's just a bass magnet, basically. Thing about Eufaula, what I was going to add to what I'm talking about here, is you can find these brim beds in deeper water. I mean, you want to think that the brim will bed in shallow water, but not the case on Eufaula. I've seen brim beds 15, 18, 20 foot, and it's unbelievable that, what you see with the electronics. And without the side scan, and you wouldn't know it. No, you wouldn't know it was there.
Yeah, that's what's exciting to me is I know how to find, I'll get up in shallow water and put polarized lenses on and look for craters. And if they're shallow enough, if there's an active brim bed, you can smell them sometimes if you catch them just
Yes,
right.
sir.
But
Yes, sir.
the idea of being able to find them that are in 10 to 20 feet of water, I've got a couple buddies who do that out in Louisiana, and that's very, very exciting to me. Where I guess two questions. One, you mentioned that one, you got to have a hard bottom shell sand something. I know they have to have that because if you get them in silt or muck, it'll smother the eggs once they lay them. So I know you're looking for sandy substrates, but looking for them that deep, 10 to 20 feet, are there places you start looking for them?
Well, I idle the flats too now. I mean, I'm not always out there on the channels, river channel, creek channel. There are times that they will get into little ditches, and they'll be close by. And a lot of the shallow brim beds are close to a drop off, a little drop off maybe. And it's interesting where you can find these beds. It's not there's no real magic place that they do it. Do the bed thing. There's some situations to where I find a bed and I'm really amazed at where it's at. You know what I mean? You can't just say that they go do their business, in the same place or same places that they always did. Now they will come back to the same brim bed the next year sometimes, but sometimes you'll see an abandoned brim bed too. We have a lot that you can pretty much, I'm talking about Lake Eufaula, that you can go back to and you'll see the fresh beds. You'll see them. There's a couple places in the creek there at Lake Point that you can just drive over and it's like clockwork. You know they're going to be there. And every year they're there. But places out on the river, a little deeper. Something changes maybe, and they decide to do the bed thing somewhere else. See, so you can't always depend on an old waypoint, that has a brim bed on it.
Sure. So you can tell, because I know, brim beds, if the current's not ripping through there, an old brim bed will stay there for a long time. But you're saying you can see the difference. There's enough detail that you can see the difference between the old beds versus the new fresh beds that they've dug.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I mean, you can tell a new one because it pops. The other ones kind of get smeared. It's hard to describe it on on the podcast, but the idea in most times I have never fished a brim bed that was an old brim bed that really has bass on it. It seems like when the brim bed is kind of getting old or whatever, you usually don't catch one there. And but I'm not going to say that you can't, but everybody's trying to catch the most and the biggest all the time.
This week's episode has been brought to you by L&M Marine. L&M Marine has something for everyone, from small hunting boats to pontoon boats to bigger bay boat and offshore hybrids. L&M Marine LLC prides itself on its customer service and knows how important it is to be taken care of and to have someone you can trust. They are locally owned and regularly support the surrounding community. L&M Marine provides superior customer service and has an entire team that consists of professional sales members, finance experts, service technicians, and a knowledgeable parts and accessory staff to fully support you. Go visit their friendly, reliable, and experienced staff today. L&M Marine is located 6 miles north of I-10 at 34600 Highway 59 in Stapleton, Alabama. You can also reach them by phone at 251-937-1380. I know you're not necessarily targeting the bluegill, but you mentioned that fish show up on side scan when you're going over those beds. Can you see the differences between the beds that have fish on them and the beds that don't?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. You get one that's really loaded, and once you scan it on side scan, you can actually see the bass laying in the brim bed. I mean, and you'll see, well, it's amazing. You'll see the white dot, in the crater, and it's amazing. And then when you see that, that's an automatic, because you can target those brim beds, throw your shaky head, whatever. I mean, you catch just about anything once you get them started. And once you get them started, I mean, it's almost every cast sometimes. And it gets fun. And
Yeah.
it's usually the migration, when they might, I'm talking about the bass migrate, offshore, is when you, and it starts usually late April and May, and then it continues through June and July into the summer months. I mean, you can pull up on a brim bed in August, catch them, and on through. You just have to check each one, maybe, and some of them are better than others, as far as history goes, as far as catching the bass. But once you see that white dot in the bed, and it's usually not just one. There, you may have, the way brim do, there's what, anywhere from 20 to 100 beds.
I was gonna say I've seen 100 before out there. Yeah, whereas I mean just a hole, it was an acre that was pockmarked with them.
Right. And then you'll have some beds that'll be close by. You'll have a bed right here, and then 10 yards, you'll have another bed. And you see that a lot on Lake Eufaula. And I'm sure other, lakes, it's the same way. But the main thing is to adjust your footage on your side scan based on the water level that you're scanning. So, like I said earlier, if I'm out there on the river ledge or creek ledges, deeper water, I'm going to have it on 100, and I'm going to be shooting it off one side. But now, if I'm in shallow water, I may have it shooting left and right, because I'm looking for brim beds, because they could be on the left side or the right side. So it just depends on where you're at. And then once you go shallow, if you're scanning shallow, then you need to drop your footage maybe to 60. And I mean, you could drop it lower than that if you wanted to. But my three settings would be, or changes would be, 100, and then I'd go to 80 or 60. Because what that's going to do, it's going to make it pop better on your screen. And that goes for any brand: Lowrance, Garmin, Hummingbird. Now Lowrance has made some improvements, and they've changed their frequencies to 700 and to 1200 on their side scan. And it's pretty interesting. But still, I got to give the high mark to Hummingbird on the side scan.
Tell me too, let's back up a little bit, because I know I have seen on friends' boats, I've seen what beds look like, but kind of describe for our listeners, if they're kind of new to this whole conversation, describe what a fish bed looks like on sonar.
Well, they're like little craters. I mean, you've seen them shallow when you look down, and the brim would be bed. And what you're seeing is really just little craters. I mean, they're little round craters. And those brim will dig out a big crater. How they make their beds, and the beds are awful large sometimes. And I think it's just how they build their house, kind of. I mean, and they're all close by, so it's a cluster basically of these round holes that you see. So it's easy to pick it out once you see it. And once you see it and you understand what you're seeing on side scan, it's easy, because every time you see that, you know what you're looking at. But each time that you see it, one of the attractions also, not just because there's rim around, it's a hard bottom, and the bass just love hard bottoms, and you know, they will get on the bottom where some of the other species of fish won't, a la the hybrids and, you know, striped bass and all that. They don't, you know, they won't do that.
Right. It's definitely for folks listening in. So a lot of times I feel like reading sonar is half art and half witchcraft and half science. But the first time I ever glanced over at a buddy's sonar and he said, "Hey, do you see right there? And you see those craters?" It really does look just like what you're used to seeing. You know, if you're just looking in the shallows with polarized lenses, and you can tell, you know, like Graz is talking about, the ones that have a white dot in the middle of them, they'll have that white dot, and then that white dot casts a shadow, and you can actually see, you know, you can see the beds, you can see which beds are bigger, and you can see which ones have a stronger, brighter white dot. And you can kind of, in my experience, and you tell me if yours is the same, Graz, but what I've noticed is that a lot of times you have your bigger brim kind of on the perimeters, like the beds will be bigger on the perimeter. And you'll have your bigger fish there, and they'll kind of be off to the side a little bit. I'm not sure why. I don't know if maybe they get off to the side and kind of establish a perimeter to keep other brim from eating their eggs, or what it is. But I've noticed that, and I kind of I've taken that to my fishing. And you know, if I get on a brim bed and I know I'm catching a lot of brim, a lot of times I'll work out and try to find that edge, because a lot of times you can get on a fringe where you catch bigger fish. But it's
Yeah,
really
I mean,
cool how detailed it is.
right. And so what I'm talking about earlier, when I was talking about the white returns that are inside the bed, that's not necessarily, I want to make that clear, that it's not a brim that I'm looking at. It's a actual largemouth bass or spot that's in the brim bed. Okay. So that's the thing. So once you see that, and the returns that you get on your graph will tell you if it's a big fish in there too, because if you see a long white dot in there, well, then you know it's a 3, 4, 5 pounder. You know, it's not a, you know, a young fish. So as to why they get in the bed itself, well, it's a hard bottom, and also I think they can hide, because it's, you know, they're in the bottom of the crater, and they can come out and get something that's getting by, you know, going by there, even if it's not a brim. So it's just, you know, now I don't know that I've ever seen a brim in the bed, you know, side scanning. I couldn't say that for sure, but when I see them, because I don't know if it's going to do a good return on a smaller fish like a brim. So I want to make that point clear. And but once you find the bed, you know, you can drop a, if you're brim fishing, you can drop a cricket or a worm in there, and they'll let you know real quick, you know, if they're there.
Oh
You
yeah.
know how they are.
Oh yeah. They're definitely, once you find those beds, if you start dragging a jig head with a red worm on them, you'll get them fired up. They don't like anything in that bed. You can drag just about anything up across there. You can drag live bait,
That cricket
artificial
too,
baits,
right?
crappie lures, anything. A cricket, when they're on bed, a lot of it is just they don't want anything in their bed. The only bad thing is you got to watch split shot, because sometimes they'll hit you split shot instead of your hook. I've watched them do that. They'll hit, try to hit
Right.
that split shot, and they'll pick it up and carry it outside their bed and spit it out. But
And you'll never catch them if they're doing
no,
that, yeah.
it's hard. Once I learned that, I sat there one day as a boy and I watched them picking at the split shot, and I switched over to a jig head, and I ran out of worms and was catching fish just on a little small, 1/16 ounce jig head just because you could throw it in a bed and he would go to
Yeah.
pick that jig head up because he didn't want it in his bed, and you could set the hook on him. And it's some really fine fishing. So, and it's interesting listening to you talk about, being able to pick up some big bass off of that bed. I mean, it makes sense. If I was a bass, like the shad is all well and good, but if I can go out there and if I got to chase down some little 2-inch shad versus if I can eat one big flat fat bluegill,
Yeah.
I think that makes a lot of sense if you're a big bass to hang around and say, well, I'm gonna eat a bluegill.
Well, they like them. I remember you were talking about when you were a kid, mom and dad took me out to Callaway Gardens. Robin Lake is that big lake out, that you go swimming in and stuff like that. And then on the other side of the lake, you could walk up to it. And I remember taking some bread and throwing it in the water right there by the other side of the lake and watching the bluegills eat the bread. And then I watched in the back behind the bluegills, okay, was this 3-4 pound bass was not wanting the bread. They were wanting the bluegills. So
Yeah.
I learned at an early age how it works with the bluegill. So
For sure. And I have caught bass before, that almost is like deep sea fishing. People talk about hooking snapper and then you got to worry about sharks getting them on the way up. But I have caught
oh,
bluegill
yeah.
on beds before. And as you're reeling them in and he's struggling and he's darting side to side, I've sat there and I've watched a big old white bucket mouth open up and a bass grab him. So they definitely eat them for sure, especially the big ones that can get past those spines.
Yeah. One thing I do is, when I'm taking a client out on a guide trip, I always try and educate them on the electronics. And I'll always. And some of them don't even own boats, but I just educate them and show them what I'm looking at. And if we run up on a brim bed, it's got a bunch of fish in it, and I'll get excited because I'm feeling like we're gonna catch them. So and they understand what I'm looking at after a while because I'll explain to them what we're looking at.
Absolutely. Well, Groz, it's definitely been informative, and I definitely, once I start fishing bluegill beds again, I'll definitely have to make sure I pack a bass rod this year to go along with it. I'm gonna give that a shot. If folks want to book a trip with you this year, do some bass fishing over some of them bluegill beds, what's a good place to reach out to you at?
They can call me at 706-593-4192. I'm on Facebook. They can text me, call me, and we'll get out there and get after it. I need to take you out there is what I need to do also. Take you out there and show
Absolutely.
you what I'm talking about. So let's figure out a date that we can do that.
For sure. I'd love to get out there.
I'll show you exactly what we're looking at and but I'll be glad to help anybody understand, electronics or help them with their fishing.
There we go. Well, guys, y'all definitely be sure to check out Groz if y'all are looking to book a trip. And Groz, as always, I appreciate you being on the show.
Anytime, Nick. Appreciate it, buddy.
This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Killer Dock. Most fishermen clean their fish on something like an unsightly old wooden table or the top of a cooler, somewhere that's not comfortable, not sanitary, and not attractive. Killer Dock makes the greatest fish cleaning stations known to mankind. They are built from marine-grade aluminum and ceramic-coated to protect them from the harsh salt environment. Killer Dock makes tables and canopies at several different sizes, so whatever you need on your dock, deck, or patio, they have a fish cleaning station for you. Check out killerdock.com to see more. Right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Get you that free AFCO Sun Protection Mask promo code and get added to our email list so that we can send you the new show each week. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks manufacture a variety of metal roofing systems to meet your needs. Whether you're putting a new roof on your home or sheeting a commercial building, they have you covered. Dixie Supply and Baker Metalworks, your metal roofing headquarters. Also by Hilton's Real-Time Navigator. bringing you the highest quality online satellite fishing charts since 2004. Your source for sea temps, allometry, currents, and watercolor at hiltonsoffshore.com. Also brought to you by Fish Bites. Whether you're hitting the sand with set rig or fishing the flats and marshes for speckled trout, redfish, and flounder, Fish Bites has something for you. Check out the full line of scented saltwater and freshwater baits at fishbites.com.